is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, in just a few weeks, Massachusetts voters will decide whether to legalize medical marijuana. If passed, the ballot question would make Massachusetts the third state in New England and the 18th state in the country to legalize medical marijuana. We're going to get into that discussion in just a second. But first, we went out to Brighton Center late last week just to sample voter sentiment.
People with disease we already give morphine to calm their pain. If they have a disease that merits marijuana, give them that.
You're talking about medical use, and that's a scam. That's what they did out in California. And the amount of pot that's sold for medical use, they got to all be terminal patients out there.
A lot of people have said it benefits their lives, so why not? There's no real harm done to it if it's legal. I mean, gets rid of the black market, doesn't it? That's the real problem, isn't it?
I think it's ruining the youth of this country. Not only this country, the world. So I'm dead against it.
So it's interesting, actually, of the 20 or so people we spoke to, that was just a handful. It was actually kind of almost 50-50, maybe a few more people in favor. But here with me in the studio is Heidi Heilman, the president of the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance, a group that opposes the measure, and Matt Allen, the executive director of the Massachusetts Patient Advocacy Alliance, a group that supports the measure. You know, Heidi, I think people are really getting into the minutiae of this bill more than they had. It seemed like a pretty simple, straightforward measure that would legalize marijuana for extreme debilitating cases. But I think people have started to look into this. I mean, I know you've spoken about it and say, well, there are certain safeguards that have not been put in place, for instance, in California, with so many of these dispensaries accessible, as Matt Allen told me last week, 1,000 in Los Angeles alone. Are you concerned about the number of dispensaries here? Because the state says they're only going to make 35 statewide, as opposed to these thousands and thousands of dispensaries that exist in California.
Well, you're exactly right. As people learn the details of this law, proposed law, the wind starts to change on this issue, and people are not supportive of the widespread use and abuse that pot stores breed. And what you just said is that, yes, it's 35 pot stores, but it could be
pot stores.
It could be more in future years.
Yeah.
So that's left open. And the other piece is about the lack of restriction around those that can actually have a medical marijuana card. We know from those in California and in Colorado, less than 1% actually have those listed conditions, where 95% or more actually are using medical marijuana for headaches and anxiety. And there's no age limit either in this law. So a parent could give marijuana to an ADH child. I mean, that's those are the details that are really seriously they're seriously prohibitive mm-hmm. as far as what this.
What about the form of the actual medicinal marijuana? I mean, as I understand it, it's everything from, you know, raw marijuana or rolled joints to candy to cookies.
To ice cream.
Yes. But Matt says those safeguards will be put into place here. Are you concerned that won't be the case?
That's not detailed in the law. So anything can go at this point, and anything can be produced. We're looking at California right now, and they have these things called medibles, and you know they're opening restaurants with marijuana infused foods. I mean, that's how big this can get, and this is big business, this medical marijuana.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the oversight and regulation being provided by our underfunded, crippled public health department, who you know, as we know, is already in a jam right now with the lack of oversight from one of their drug labs, and they're supposed to oversee a unique and separate pharmaceutical structure that would open 35 pharmacies for pot, separate pharmacies. It circumvents our entire medical system. It circumvents our pharmaceutical system. Anyone 21 years or older can sell marijuana in the state if this passes,
mm-hmm.
and with that, with as long as they don't have a felony conviction. Anybody with a felony conviction who's 21 years or older could grow marijuana. So there's no training. People don't have to have a high school diploma to even own or operate a pot store.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Matt, as we know, it's not going to be FDA approved. And so it's not really a prescription. It's really more of a recommendation from a doctor. It's supposed to be for these debilitating diseases. But as Heidi rightfully points out, I mean, that has just broken down, not just in California, but in Colorado and other states where it exists. Why won't that be the case here?
Well, first of all, it's not true that we're necessarily going to see 35 treatment centers in the first year. The legislation says up to 35. The minimum is one in each county, so that would be just 14. When we're talking about the systems in other states, Colorado, California, this is much different. We've looked at the practices in those other states, and we've included regulations to address those. Limiting the 35 treatment centers is one regulation, also requiring a state-run centralized database where all patients and doctors have to register will help immediately show to state authorities if any doctors or just a few unscrupulous doctors are making thousands of recommendations. But let's go back to that study that Heidi mentions, talking about 95% of patients. And, you know, I've read these studies. There's one, I think, that says 3% of patients enrolled in California have HIV or cancer. The other 95% are still people who have serious illnesses. In the patient population we work with, that's folks with ulcerative colitis to the point that there are holes in their colon and it had to be removed, chronic vomiting syndrome, cerebral palsy. And a big portion of these patients are suffering from debilitating chronic pain. Some of those that we work with are folks who have nerve pain from brain surgery. There's a patient that Heidi's met who has allodynia, which is a debilitating nerve pain condition. Another person I was just meeting this weekend has her hips rebuilt and held together with a steel cage.
Okay. One of the questions I asked you this, and I really want you to get the specifics of this, because as someone who smoked pot in their youth, I mean, it wears off. And in fact, fairly quickly. It's not like morphine or Vicodin or Percocet or something like that. So once you get a prescription, do you just keep smoking it? I really am serious about that. So how does that work?
Sure. I mean, it really depends on each patient and what their need is. The story I was just about to tell, and I know that we're trying to move along here.
No, that's all right. I'm not in a hurry.
The story of Kim, who had her hips rebuilt and has a steel cage in there. The hips were destroyed during aggressive chemotherapy many years ago. This is someone who takes Oxycontins or Percocets a few times a week. When she has medical marijuana, she doesn't have to take those. She can administer the medicine instead.
Does she smoke it all day long? I'm serious about this.
Right. Her pain, it comes and goes. So, no, is not someone who has to use it all day long. There's another patient I work with who has paralysis, lives up in Groton.
But this isn't
and
what
he's
the argument
on,
is.
But wait.
I mean, the argument is that we can't go case by case and say, oh, I agree that this one individual that I've met should have access, but then object to the very language that would cover these patients. We think that the choice should be left between doctors and patients. So the patient with paralysis that I was mentioning, he's on 6 Oxycontins a day. He uses a tincture. The tincture allows patients to get a low level in their blood that doesn't spike like when they vaporize, but stays in the blood a longer time. Right. And he's been able to cut down from 6 oxys a day to 2. So why on earth would we want to deny patients access to a medicine that can cut back, and the clinical studies show this, cut back their use of toxic, addictive, and potentially deadly drugs.
Talking to Matt Allen of the Massachusetts Patient Advocacy Alliance, who is in favor of question 3 that would legalize medicinal marijuana, and Heidi Heilman, president of the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance. And Heidi, we were about to say, this is not what we're talking about. What did you mean by that?
Yes, I mean, we all have compassion for those patients, and we're not trying to deny those patients medical marijuana. We're saying that this is not the structure to put in place to do that, to allow people who have those illnesses, who do find relief from marijuana. This is not the law to pass. This is going to be there are so many loopholes in this that it's going to be widely exploited, and anybody can come in and abuse this system. And so what we're saying is let's do a needs assessment. How many patients are there, and how do we structure it so that we do have very clean, very, very tight oversight, and with restrictions that make it so that our youth aren't smoking marijuana more.
But what is your big concern here, Heidi? Is it the camel's nose under the tent that once it's legalized for medicinal purposes, that it will be legalized in the open market? Are you really afraid that, I mean, you could argue that alcohol is more dangerous or poisonous to youth than marijuana. So what is your harshest concern here?
My harshest concern is the youth culture and the generation of youth that we are breeding that are right now heavily absorbed in the alcohol world. Our underage drinking rates
and Ritalin and other things that are prescribed
as well. And here we have
against,
situation.
Would you be against that too?
Well, you know, we have right now 4 recovery high schools in Massachusetts. We're about to open another one. There's one slated to open in Worcester. Those treatment centers are full of kids with pot addiction, and that's the number one drug that puts kids into treatment across the country. Yet the use is less than it is of underage drinking right now because there are restrictions in place. So yes, I'm very concerned about our young people having access to marijuana. And we know from the research that access to marijuana or access to a drug and and the perception of harm to a drug has direct impact on what our youth use rates are.
It's pretty easy to get right now. How would you answer that? If a teenager or a young adult wanted to get marijuana, they could quite easily.
That's exactly right. And a lot of the pot that we're seeing right now is diverted from the medical marijuana stores in other states. So we've seen medical marijuana from Maine and from California in the hands of our youth already. So when we look at our rates right now in Massachusetts, they're 30% higher than the national average. So how far are we going to go? We opened 35 pot stores. It's going to be very difficult for parents to wrap their arms around, you know, making it so that their kids aren't starting to smoke marijuana in middle school and then high school mm-hmm. to continue it.
Okay, Matt, one of the things that Heidi said is that there didn't seem to be any measures in place that would prevent Massachusetts from providing medicinal marijuana in the form of candy, cookies, ice cream, lollipops, you name it. Is that not accurate?
There's a lot of parts of the program that will be addressed during the regulatory phase. With the ballot initiative, we just set out a framework, including some very serious restrictions to prevent the very abuses that Heidi's worried about in other states. I would say it's interesting that on one hand, the opponents say that patients shouldn't smoke medicine, and the idea, if medicine is being smoked, patients shouldn't have any access at all. But when you look at the idea of medibles, they object to that too. So we can't have it both ways.
How do most people, do you have any data on that?
How
do most people ingest marijuana? Do they smoke it or do they take it another way?
Many folks do use tinctures and ingest in other ways. What doctors will recommend for patients who need immediate relief in the case of severe pain or vomiting, severe nausea, is to use a vaporizer.
Because many people with ALS, for instance, can't smoke it. So how would they ingest it?
Well, they could use a vaporizer, so there's still that they could still breathe.
Yeah.
A vaporizer heats the medicine to a point where it releases the active ingredients of steam. You avoid the toxins that are associated with combustion. So bringing this program into the light, allowing doctors to speak about that with their patients, helps patients learn that the smoking is actually not the ideal delivery mm-hmm. method. And that's the conversations doctors and patients would like to have.
So I would just say that voters want patients to have medication, that's clear. But when you look at the details of this legislation, they don't want the crime, the truancy, the violence that comes with the structure that we're proposing to put in place. And it's a failed experiment in Colorado and California. It's failing across the nation. And Massachusetts is not a state that we want to see that happen.
What kind of crime are you concerned about?
Well, there's crime with guns and with people robbing each
stores.
Other and robbing people on the streets and there's, you know, robbing houses because when you put in a structure in place where people can grow their own drug, their own narcotic, that's what we're talking about. Then you have, you know, that just opens up a whole world of crime and violence that comes with people wanting to get access to that.
Well, some people would argue just legalize it all in that case.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a ballot question right now that's going to, if that's the case, then right, this is a disingenuous ballot question because we're wrapping legalization under the guise of medicine.
Well, you know,
that is a charge, Matt.
Yeah, and let me address that because if we want to talk about disingenuous charges, I would turn that back on you, Heidi. The fact is we only support safe access to medical marijuana for patients, and you're saying that there's specific regulations that could be tighter. I mean, the fact is you would oppose any change to allow medical marijuana in here because you and your organization oppose medical marijuana on principle, and you alluded to that when you talked about cultural differences. But you can also go straight to the Mass Prevention website where there's materials on there saying that patients aren't getting relief from physical symptoms. They just feel high and they think that they're getting better, and that's not what the science says. And
Matt,
so,
I would be very
well,
willing
no
to sit down.
On this.
I would
oh,
be very willing to sit down with you and write a bill together that puts restrictions in place and limits the medical marijuana that people need to access to.
Well, that's what I was asking, Matt. Wait a minute. Let's speak about the science because there has been no FDA research. There's been no scientific. Who's done it?
There have been more than 6,500 clinical trials that have been published published across the in peer-reviewed
largely
journals
largely by advocates
the
of
there
medical
FDA,
marijuana.
There have been FDA clinical trials. I have some right here. They've just not been on the scale to get all the way through
the
FDA approval process.
And what do they show?
They showed that medical marijuana is very effective in reducing nausea, pain, muscle spasticity,
and other conditions,
and that it's also safe. And I'm going to give you this.
But that's the process we're talking about you're circumventing, and that's the rigorous study and clinical trial needs to we need to be patient with that process. And I would argue that that's it might be a flawed system, but it's the strongest system we have in order to approve and figure out the safety of medicine. And you are circumventing that process, and to speed that process up through a public opinion,
this also addresses, not to interrupt, but now that I'm looking at this stuff, it also sort of reinforces one of my points, what's the short-term efficacy. So it's, unless you keep smoking it, you know, it's going to wear off.
Well, you know,
dope wears off
just
quickly.
Like, you know, all drugs, they take effect and they wear off. So we just think it's between doctors and patients. Like I said, there's
some
cases.
Some of them go on for hours and hours.
And
medical marijuana.
Wait a minute, we got it one at a time.
Medical marijuana, when patients take in tincture form, can also go on for hours and hours. It's up to doctors and patients to determine what's appropriate. In terms of the FDA approval process, the reason we've had to come to the state level is that it's hopelessly obstructed at the federal level. You don't have to take my word for it. You can just search the New York Times, January 2010, for what the National Institute of Drug Abuse spokespeople are saying. They're the only ones who supply medicine or marijuana for research in the United States, and they're very clear that they do not supply it except in some token cases into research into its medical use.
So I would just say that there's already marijuana-based medicines that are widely prescribed. One is Marinol. It's been through the FDA process. It has THC in it, and that's widely prescribed in our country. We also have another one in its late-stage trial that's coming out of the FDA. I mean, this is the same situation that we went through in the 80s with the HIV epidemic when people wanted their medicine in it, and it's not the fastest process. We would support speeding up the studies with marijuana and to process, you know, to really look at the cannabinoids within the plant and separate them and figure out what the efficacy is and figure out what they actually do and process it and bring it down to a process medicine that's safe and doctors know what the clinical trials are and they have all that information. And that's one of the reasons right now the Mass Medical Society, which represents over 24,000 doctors, is strongly opposed to this ballot question and to medical marijuana because they don't have that research. They don't have that study. And it's not the way we do medicine in this country. So I would say that this is a way to circumvent that process and I'm ready to sit down in a compromised way. I would sit down with the patient advocacy group and put a bill together that makes sense where we're not going to throw our youth under the bus.
You're not just totally against this. You just don't think this bill is properly
I don't
written.
Think 35 well, pot stores overseen by a public health department that's underfunded, that are nonprofit, by the way. There's no tax revenue to provide money to oversee and regulate and enforce this law. So now we're looking at taxpayers footing that bill to put the people in place that are going to be needed to oversee and regulate this.
That's actually not correct. The bill is designed to be revenue neutral, and oversight of the program the fees for that will be generated through licensing fees. In terms of actually working together to move this forward, I mean, the right time to do that, as the question one, people, both sides got together on question one and came to a compromise back in April. To come on a radio show and say that right now, a month before the vote, when you never contacted me about actually doing a compromise, I think it's disingenuous. In terms of the medical community, 1,200 doctors back in 2004 signed a statement of support saying that patients should have access and doctors should be able to recommend medical marijuana. The Rhode Island Medical Society is a heavy supporter of the program down there. The New York Medical Society, the California Medical Society, or other medical societies support this. Those who've endorsed this specific initiative in Massachusetts include the Mass Nurses Association, the New England Coalition of Cancer Survivorship, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the Chronic Fatigue and Immunodeficiency Syndrome Foundation, and many other groups. And I don't think it's realistic to think that we've somehow fooled all these public health advocates into passing this program supporting this program when there's ulterior motives. The fact is the science is there, and we have to circumvent
the science isn't
the federal
there
process.
Because we haven't gone through the FDA process. The science is not there, and they've made very clear that there is no future in smoked raw marijuana as
right.
a medicine.
Well, we're not talking about smoked medicine. No, we're talking about vaporized. And
you're not talking about
as I've indicated.
So
there
wait a minute. So you're talking about these pot stores that are all over California and all over Colorado right now. You're denying that anybody smokes pot in those pot stores?
I'm denying that the system here in Massachusetts is going to look anything like that. And if we don't want patients to smoke this medicine, it doesn't make sense to take away the medicine that we know that works. We should bring it into the light and allow them to discuss with doctors other administration methods.
That the doctors have clearly said, we don't want to have these discussions. We do not want to be in the middle of this system that has no science and research. We don't do medicine this way. And their own licensing is, their own medical licenses are at risk.
Actually, that's not true. That's completely inaccurate.
Let me go back to a point that Matt did make. Why wasn't this question fully vetted in a way that you think would have been more palatable to you back when it got on the ballot?
Why, so the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance formed back in January when realizing that after doing some research that this is a, you know, that we're trying to wrap legalization under the guise of medicine. And so that to us was disingenuous. So we started to bring people together to have a voice on this debate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this thing's been a freight train trying to wrap our heads around.
Who wrote the actual question?
A prosecutor, a former prosecutor named Jack Corrigan, who also teaches a class at Harvard about how to be a prosecutor. Not really the face of a drug legalizer, I don't think.
No, but I would say that this entire initiative has been funded by one man in Ohio, ex-CEO.
To the tune of $500,000.
No, a million dollars, yeah. Yes.
And your group really hasn't raised any.
Hasn't raised much money at all. We're talking less than $3,000.
So it is a freight train. Do you feel like this is inevitable that this will pass?
This is somebody pushing his, you know, this man who has funded this is a very vocal, very publicly voiced proponent of marijuana legalization. And this is this group and his followers pushing the repeal of pot prohibition across the country, state by state, and he's determining this man is going to determine, mm-hmm. you know, what our public health policy here in Massachusetts.
It's hard to deny this, Matt.
Well, what I would say is that it's not Peter Lewis who donated to the campaign who's calling the shots. Like I said, we formed Mass Patient Advocacy Alliance 4 years ago, and there's been a lot of grassroots efforts for decades before that. We've got patients and members across the state. We function sometimes on a volunteer basis, sometimes on a shoestring budget. We're very grateful that Mr. Lewis responded to our requests to offer support for this. I don't know much about his other policy positions, and I really could care less. What I can tell you about Mr. Lewis is that he is a medical marijuana patient himself. He suffered an amputation. He has debilitating nerve pain. And I know that he understands compassion for patients, but there's no nefarious scheme to pass this law as a trick to try to legalize all drugs. This is really
I have a quote here. I have a quote here from the group that is a very strong supporter of this that says, "This is a stepping stone to legalization. It's the plan: decriminalization in 2008, medical in 2012, legal in 2016. Yes, we want to legalize. We will completely legalize for everybody in 2016."
What group is that?
That came out about 2 months ago, less than a month. Than 2 months ago.
There's a lot of people. I mean, I can go on YouTube and find folks who agree with you, but are not officially associated with your campaign and try to cast you as someone
Good
who
debate.
Wants to lock up all.
Is it question one or three?
We're going to be three.
People can learn more at mavoteno on question3.com.
Question three or question one?
Question three.
That's what I just said.
Yes, mavoteno on question3.com.
Question three. Okay. Yes. All right. Matt Allen of the Massachusetts Patient Advocacy Alliance and Heidi Heilman, president of the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance. Good debate. 30 issues on 30 days. That was our debate on medicinal marijuana coming up on the November ballot.
Thank you,
listening
Emily.
To Boston Public Radio. And coming up, we're going to be talking to veteran journalist Rory O'Connor about how the internet is changing everything from politics to the nutritional value of our media diet. I'm Emily Rooney. You are listening to Boston Public Radio.